Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to This Is Your Significant Other / Wife / Girlfriend Breakdown Edition. Well, I should say preview off the bye week, considering we got what I think is probably one of my favorite Spotify comments ever. Now, I don't know how to check the Spotify comments. I leave that to Luke.
That's amazing that you don't even know how to check. So you literally the only ones you've seen are the ones that I send you?
Essentially. I think I could probably figure it out. I haven't looked. So we got a Spotify comment for those of you joining us here for the Rutgers game preview. Well, it's my favorite week of the entire year as a media member because it is – I want you to picture me. 6'4", all of me compared to Luke Buer's 5'9" ginger self. And I'm walking down my Roseville street and I got on these 1950s suspenders and I'm pulling them away from my body. And I got this nice Disney-esque stroll going on because, ladies and gentlemen, it is Narrative Street and we'll spend plenty of time there today. But Luke, I need you to give at least a little context of what you sent me the other day.
All right. So I won't use a last name, but Haley left a note on the Spotify comments. It says, my boyfriend, in quotes, makes me listen to the pod, starting to learn a lot and appreciate all the info. How about next bye week we do a, in quotes, GF edition where we go over some of the basics of college football. Would love to learn more, especially from the mastermind himself, or she said mastermind of Ryan Burns, but I wanted to say himself, Ryan Burns.
I hope she's joking there, and I'm sure she is, and she's poking jest at me because that's what we love to do on this podcast. But I can only imagine how many of our listeners right now are in the car with their significant others, and that poor person next to you in the passenger seat has to listen to my dulcet tones. And I want you to turn to your wife, your girlfriend, your significant other, your partner, whatever you call them, and say, I love you and I appreciate you and thank you for letting me enjoy my hobbies and interests, which for this poor person remains the Gopher football team. So Haley, thank you for reaching out. I think that's outstanding. Maybe Luke and I will get to that in November. But I laughed. I cannot express to you how hard I laughed at that comment. I showed it to my wife and she just goes, you live such a strange life. And I go, I'm well aware, but I love each and every one of you listeners. And there's, for some unbeknownst reason to us, thousands upon thousands of you every week. But I know it's a bye week and I know there's a lot of people who are still upset considering how it was left going into the bye week. And it also doesn't help that Cal then gets boat raced by the Fighting Sean Lewis's of San Diego State.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing that kind of like, I said something to the extent of, I think Cal will be pretty good. I still stand by that. But college football, that's Haley, this is part of what makes college football weird is a lot of times what you expect just doesn't come to fruition. And
the transitive property in college football shouldn't be taken as anything?
Well, there's that, but also the fact that so many of these guys are, you know, what, 18 to 20? Well, I guess they can be up to like 24 and 25 now, and we're getting to the end of that stage. But you just never know what's going to show up, and especially when they travel, you just never know. You could argue maybe Minnesota is a more talented team against Cal, but just didn't execute enough, right? And then turnovers are just the great equalizer too, right? Like you maybe can lack the talent, but if you have turnovers, well, good luck. And that's what happened for Minnesota and Cal didn't have any turnovers. Conversely, you look at Cal against San Diego State. No, the turnovers really killed them. So
San Diego State with a couple of defensive touchdowns against the Jaren Chiave Sangapolatele. We'll get into it at the end of the episode when we look at the Big Ten slate, because it's one of the best, if not, I would probably say it's the best weekend for college football slate games across the country. But we're going to find, and here's my teaser, we're going to find out a lot about this two time zone thing we've spent so much time on the last 2 weeks, because there's some very marquee matchups, even within the Big Ten, that involve teams going two time zones over. Very, very fascinating. Or even for the game this weekend at 11 a.m. when the Rutgers Scarlet Knights get to come to Dinky Town to take on your Golden Gophers. That's a long flight from Newark to get here.
Yeah.
It's not, I understand that it's not exactly crossing multiple time zones, but that's a lot of miles between now and then for an 11 a.m. game. It is truly one of the games on this schedule that is, to me, one of the tipping points for what this season can be. And there's a lot of things within that, even within it for the Gophers, but the home slate was always going to be determining how Minnesota did this season. And this is the first of so many coin flip games for them at home, where you look at the next handful of home games where you have this one against Rutgers, in 2 weeks you get Purdue. That one shouldn't hopefully be a coin flip game by that point, especially if Darius Taylor is healthy and back. You've also got Nebraska there, Michigan State. Like, these are the games you have to go 3-1 in of that four if you're going to still find a way to get to the over on the season win total, which was 6.5. I love this game. I think it is going to be a very fun one. I think if you want to see points put up, you're going to see points put up at Huntington Bank. But I'm already revealing to Luke Buer what maybe my prediction is going to be compared to that over-under.
All right. Don't show your hand too much. The thing that we do need to get to, Ryan, is injuries, right? We need to talk about injuries. They're a part of football. No team is going to be absent injuries. I know that Rutgers, for instance, is dealing with some offensive line injuries. Didn't seem to cause too much of an issue against Iowa. But we also know that Minnesota has a fair number of injuries as well. So what can you give us in terms of news on the injury front and what to expect? We won't obviously know until 2 hours before the game.
Thank you, Philip John Fleck, for answering that question already for all of our listeners in relationship to Darius Taylor and A.J. Turner. Darius Taylor, we asked about his status at Monday's press conference with the head coach. He told us, Andy Greeter of the Pioneer Press asked the question. He tries to phrase it in a different way each week to try and see if the head coach will ever give us anything, us media jackals, anything different. He said, how many running backs you're going to have, or what are the running backs you're going to have available? And Fleck, essentially with a coy smile on his face, said, we'll have running backs available and you'll find out 2 hours ahead of time. Now we ran, I'm all jittery because of how many things I want to get to within this game and how many things even within the Gopher football bye week that I had to write about, or I didn't have to write about, but I felt like that there's a lot of consternation right now about explosive plays, and we'll get to them. But with Darius Taylor, the Rutgers game will mark 21 days since his injury, 21 days since Fleck came out afterwards and said they got a real positive diagnosis. Now, if you go back through Darius's injury history, he returned from last year's hamstring tweak at the 25-day mark. So Rutgers would be certainly on the early end of that. I tend to think he probably doesn't go for this game. I know that they're trying to do everything they can to get him to be ready to go for this game at practice this week. But the thing I would stress is, you look at what happened with Wisconsin last week with their quarterback, Billy Edwards, their highest paid player on the roster, according to multiple people in reports that have come out here in September. Luke, he returned probably on the early end of whatever his diagnosis was from his injury. And on the first series, what happened?
In the Wisconsin game? Didn't watch it.
He re-injured it.
Ooh.
And now, as we've learned certainly throughout the process, the re-injury tends to be always worse than the initial injury. So if Darius is expected to be out, say hypothetically, and again, Fleck doesn't give timetables because why would he, somewhere around 3 to 4 weeks, well, I would imagine he probably sits for this one. I would, if he's even close to not being 100%, if he's at 99% next week, for those of you going to Columbus, I still hope he sits. I'll be there out there with you. But I want him ready to go for that final slate coming up in October featuring Purdue, featuring Nebraska, featuring Michigan State. Like that, those are all much more winnable games than what Ohio State appears to be. I also don't think you're going to see AJ Turner in this game. I think that injury is going to be a season-long one. We'll find out officially on Saturday morning, which means you're likely going to be heading into this game with Femi Ijeboy and Cam Davis as your 1 and 2. I'm here to tell you, I'm giving Femi Ijeboy 20 touches in this game if I'm Greg Harbaugh, because I want to see Minnesota actually have a playmaker make someone miss a tackle. This is a inflection point game for me with with the skill position players, because I'm getting pretty tired of the whole explosive plays narrative, which is getting pretty drawn out to me, and I'll get to it, and I know I keep bearing the lead with it. Jalen Logan Redding, I think after the bye week, should be much healthier than he was against Cal. That should be good news for Minnesota's pass rush. I'm trying to think if there's any other guys on Minnesota that we know about. Kerry Brown was dealing with a back injury during the Cal game. I think he's going to be fine and ready to go.
Sure.
And then on the Rutgers side of things, I'd argue their best linebacker, I know his number, it's number 2. He left the Iowa game last Friday night with a non-contact knee injury, or a non-contact lower extremity injury. How about we call it that? And doesn't sound like he's going to be ready to go. I think Minnesota without Darius Taylor and the splits are pretty jarring. I had one of the members on Gopher Illustrated actually look into this. When Darius Taylor has played, so Minnesota has played 27 games since 2023, Luke. I don't know if you even saw this. Do you want to guess Minnesota's record with Darius Taylor? He's played in 18 of those 27 games since 2023.
18 of 27, so out of 18. Let me guess, they're probably like 12-6.
You nailed it. And they're putting up 24.7 points per game, which means without Darius Taylor, they are 2-7 thus far. And they offensively go from 24.7 points per game to 17.1. That is a full touchdown less without Darius Taylor. Now, this is a Rutgers defense that is bad. And that should shock no one, considering Rob Smith. So I do not understand how Rob Smith continues to get defensive coordinator jobs. Luke, yeah. You're going to have to explain it to
me. I can't. No, I'm not even going
to
try.
It is mind-boggling to me because he was horrendous for Minnesota. If you're thinking to yourself, Ryan, why does the name Rob Smith reach the depths of my mind and say, that's a niche? Why am I needing to scratch it? It's because he was PJ Fleck's first defensive coordinator at Minnesota and was subsequently fired in midway through 2018 after there was a stretch in which Iowa put up 50 and then Illinois put up 50 something in Champaign, and he got fired and Joe Rossi took over. I do not understand how that man continues to get jobs, but now he's back at Rutgers being the defensive coordinator, taking over for former Minnesota co-defensive coordinator Joe Harris-Semiak, who's now the UMass head coach.
So can I just quickly go through Rob Smith's tenure since he was at Minnesota? I don't have the years for this, but I did a spreadsheet on this when you and I often argue about assistant salaries, and I was curious on like homegrown and like what happened to assistants after they left and stuff. So I used some AI and pulled this, but Rob Smith went from Minnesota, then he was an analyst at Texas A&M. Then he went to Rutgers, where he was either forced out or, you know, walked away. And then he was at
Where
Duke.
Where do you stand on the whole, like, even with the news today that Mike Gundy was fired from Oklahoma State, where do you stand on the whole fired versus the much more, I'll say, gentler wording on parted ways? Does it matter to you and how it ultimately ends up getting phrased, or a mutual decision?
No, I mean, the mutual decision probably just means that they agreed to some sort of buyout and decided, like, yeah, we'll do this and you'll give me the high road. Like, that's fine. Okay. Rob Smith then went from Rutgers, where I'd say he probably got forced out. Then he was at Duke, probably got forced out. Then he's at Penn State as an analyst, and now he's back at Rutgers.
How is he on his third defensive coordinator at the Power 4 level gig since he was horrendous here at Minnesota?
Was he not the defensive coordinator at Rutgers before Minnesota too?
Yes. He continues to get jobs.
So either, I mean, I think where it goes is like good relationships or he has dirt. I mean, it's got to be one of the two, right?
I'd be lying if I told you. I asked some people around around Minnesota to say, sort of jokingly, that exact statement of, does he have some incriminating photos of someone somewhere? Or does he have the best agent I've ever seen? How does this, because I can assure you, he is not some master. He can't sell ice to an Eskimo. I've been through enough Rob Smith press conferences in my lifetime, and it's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand how he continues to get jobs. And now I say that, and he's going to come into Huntington Bank Stadium on Saturday and pitch a shutout. And then I'm going to wake up to a text message from a Piscataway area code saying some very kind things, I'm sure. But I do not understand it. I just do not understand the whole Rob Smith thing and how he is now in 2025 still a Power 4 defensive coordinator. Mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, and he's one of only three that have been at Minnesota that I think were fired. It's him, Mike Sanford Jr., and Andrew Soder. Those are probably the only three under the PJ.
Yeah, and Sanford is now a high school football coach in Colorado who also does Boise State radio, I think.
Oh, good for him.
And I think Andrew Soder is now something to do with agents, like in terms of a liaison between football coaches and football agents, something like that. So very interesting career paths for all three of them.
All right. Well, we do need to get to this. Let's talk about when the Gophers are on offense. I think the thing to note here is that this is a Rob Smith led defense. So when we're looking at Minnesota on the season, they're averaging 34.3 points per game. Conversely, Rutgers is giving up 24 points per game. Minnesota ranks 11th in points per game. Rutgers ranks 15th in points per game in the Big Ten. Minnesota on the season has no problem putting up yards. They're averaging 420.7 yards per game. That's 10th in the Big Ten. Rutgers is giving up 343.5, which ranks 14th. Minnesota, when they're rushing the ball, is averaging 180 yards, which is 9th in the Big Ten. And then Rutgers is giving up 151, which is 14th in the Big Ten. And when it comes to passing yards per game, Minnesota is averaging 240 yards, which is 11th in the Big Ten, and Rutgers giving up 192, which ranks 10th in the Big Ten. I think one thing to note as well, this is both kind of a full team stat, but from a strategy perspective, Minnesota in time of possession averages 35 minutes and 12 seconds, which is second in the Big Ten. And Rutgers averages 34 minutes and 27 seconds, which is fourth. So both want to be able to possess the ball and maintain the ball. The one drastic difference is just the sheer number of explosive plays. Ethan has been really good. We'll break down maybe some of his numbers later, but they have been more explosive. I'm sure you'll talk about this. But Minnesota, another stat I think is at least worth getting to is red zone scoring percentage for touchdowns. More specifically, Minnesota is 50%, which ranks 15th in the Big Ten. And Rutgers, when you get into the red zone defense, it gives up a touchdown 71% of the time, which ranks 17th in the Big Ten. So if Minnesota can't score in the red zone this week, it could be a rough go of it, Ryan.
I'm going to be honest, Luke. I'm through Calc 4. Oh, good for me. The amount of stats and numbers you just threw at me, I even have a little bit of a glaze over my eyes.
I decided to use the rankings, which maybe wasn't helpful, and it added a lot more to it. But yeah, like the ranks, I think what it points out, at least to me, is Minnesota's kind of in the middle, and Rutgers defensively is kind of on the bad side defensively. So you really got to think.
Kind of on the bad side?
Yeah.
I mean, they are the worst in the Big Ten, allowing 7.08 yards per play against FBS opponents.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Before I even talk more about the Rutgers defense, I'm going to come back to the Minnesota offense with this. And that's one of the things that I've heard your carrier pigeons. I've read your smoke signals. I've parsed through the Morse code. And because of my line of work, I run a message board. Part of that is on gopherillustrated.com, of which you all should become the lovely, handsome, beautiful members that those lovely, lovely folks are. And I spent way too much time on the bye week talking about the word explosive plays. And I even asked the head football coach about it on Monday, of which he did not like my questions on Monday. And if you don't believe me, you are more than welcome to go back and watch that press conference on the YouTubes. My point with explosive plays to people is I've had so many people ask me, why does the offense stink? And why can't Greg Harbaugh be fired as the offensive coordinator? He stinks at putting up explosive plays. When Kirk Ciarrocco was here, Luke, they had explosive plays.
I don't know that that's actually true, but...
Well, that is a great thing to ask.
We complained about this all the time. Like that, we kept saying, like, this is the step they need to take to become an elite offense. And outside of 2019, they really didn't.
I looked into it because I thought to myself, there's a lot of conjecture about this. So let me look into the stats to actually give factual data. In Minnesota's 8 full seasons, and I'm taking out the COVID season, 8 full seasons of data. How many times has the Gopher football offense finished above 92nd in FBS in 20 yards or more explosive plays?
Once.
So essentially a play that goes 20 or more yards. How many times have they finished above 92nd? Luke Buehr said one. And ding, 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 ladies and gentlemen, we are at the Ramsey County Fair, and he gets to go home with a prize once. Every other season, this is not something new to this year's offense. They have struggled to put up big plays. In 2019, they finished 23rd in college football in plays that went 20 or more yards as an offense. And now as they sit here today, they're right on pace to be about 90th to 95th again. My consternation comes when people can see that. And I don't, for the record here, I agree. I'd love for the Gopher football offense to be more explosive. They need to be more explosive if Minnesota's going to win more football games. But, and it is a giant but, like I'm talking BBL big, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
We also need to talk about how they're not getting a lot of help from their defense and they're not getting a lot of help from their return game. Like I went back and I went way deep on this. Do you know how many consecutive drives Minnesota has had that have started outside of field goal range? And for the purposes of that arbitrary phrase, outside of the opponent's 45-yard line into Minnesota's territory. And this is a sample size I'm using against FBS opponents. How many consecutive drives have Minnesota had that happen?
This season?
When was the last time, how many consecutive drives have they not taken over within an opponent's 45-yard line or closer to their end zone?
I'm going to ask you again. This season, I don't think it's happened.
Unfortunately, it spans back to last season.
Yeah. Twice.
Minnesota's offense has started a drive in an FBS opponent's 45-yard line one time in the last 18 quarters.
Is it – what game was it?
And I'm glad you – this is the one time where I'm glad you never read what I write.
Yeah.
Because I wrote about it this week, and I figure if I write about it, we should talk about it on the pod. That one time should have an asterisk by it because that's when Minnesota took over on downs in Camp Randall with 90 seconds left when they were up 17.
So it doesn't really count.
The other time, the last time before that, so a non-garbage time drive, Derek LeCaptain got a fingertip on a
Penn
punt
State.
Against Penn State.
Yeah.
And then Harbaugh dialed up the trick play touchdown to Jameson Gears. To put this a different way to get you to understand this, the Gopher offense has had one drive in their last 47 possessions. One drive, and that was the garbage time one. one drive that has started within an opponent's 45-yard line. Like, that is insane. The field position with it, I don't know if they've ever had a stretch like that before in the history of Fleck. And I made, and how does that happen? Okay, what am I trying, what's the point I'm trying to make? My point is, the Gopher defense, while they are tremendous at limiting yards, and there's a lot of value to that, and I'm not taking anything away from what Corey Heatherman did or what Danny Collins has done to start his young tenure as the defensive coordinator. Minnesota's defense has one defensive takeaway in their last five games against FBS competition.
Mm-hmm.
You're not flipping the field. And then we get into the return game with it, too. We're coming off a weekend in college football and in the NFL where there may have not been in the last 5 years more impactful plays on special teams than what you saw in college and in the NFL last weekend. Think about the Iowa-Rutgers game alone, Luke. What happened the first play of the game?
Yeah, special teams touchdown.
It was a kick return touchdown. Iowa also blocked a kick. This Rutgers team coming into town this weekend has blocked three punts and kicks already so far this season. I think about the Eagles game where there was a blocked field goal return for a touchdown to win it. I mean, there were special team impact plays galore. And Minnesota just doesn't get any. I mean, they just, their return game, and I know a lot of you are thinking to yourself, Ryan, I'm going to fast forward through this. I'm tired of you complaining and throwing a hissy fit about special teams. It's not just about touchdowns, Ryan. Luke, this one I looked up, and I looked it up about four different times to make sure I had this right because it doesn't seem real to me. In their last 76 games, that is a 7-6, 76 games, how many punt returns has Minnesota had go over 30 yards? Not even a punt return touchdown, Mr. Luke Buehr.
So, okay.
Just go over 30 yards.
So you got
how many?
Coy Parrish, Michigan. You've got, I would think Demetrius Douglas might fit in there. So at least two. I'll go with three because this is punt return. Well, I don't think.
Punt return.
I don't. So I'm going to go two. I don't think there's three.
In their last 76 games, Minnesota has had one punt return go over 30 yards.
Oh, is Douglas outside of 30 yards? One.
I cut the sample size at the prior to the Demetrius Douglas 2018
killed me.
Touchdown against Wisconsin. In their last 29 games, Luke, how many kick returns has Minnesota had just go into opponent territory? That is how low the bar I'm trying to make this for Bob Ligashevsky and PJ Fleck. How many kick returns in the last 29 games have just gotten into the opponent's territory?
I think one for sure. Quinn Redding had one that crossed half, or he almost scored a touchdown, didn't quite get it. And I think that was in the last 26 games. I think one.
In the last 29 games,
or 20,
Minnesota has had one kick return, and that was Lemecki Rocket Ship Brockington in the Quicklane Bowl in 2023, getting it to the 48. Why I bring this up is if we're going to talk about explosive plays and the offense needs to generate more, I cannot stress how explicitly clear I'm being and agreeing with you in that. But we also need to look at the other facets of PJ Fleck 78%. It's plastered all over Dinky Town, all over the Gopher football building of the 78%. Now, what is the 78% that PJ Fleck loves to talk about? Well, I'm glad you asked. It is winning the missed tackle battle. It's winning the turnover margin, and it's having, quote, unquote, more explosive plays than your opponent. And this was kind of my point that I was trying to make to him this week was, if two-thirds of your 78% is winning the turnover margin, and I think we all would agree the offense isn't having an issue turning the ball over. If your quarterback is making an interception a game and you're not putting the ball on the ground as an offense, which I don't believe Minnesota's got a fumble so far this season. Offensively, at least. I know the Coy Parrish muff one, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, as an offense, only turning it over once, that's pretty dang good in college football. But that's the crux of my issue with you have one defensive takeaway. If you're not making explosive plays as a defense, and there's value, I will continue to say, in getting off the field on third down and being a bend-don't-break defense. We saw that for years with Tracy Clays. We saw that for years with Joe Rossi. And now Danny Collins. The issue is someone somewhere in some unit has to make an explosive play. So So say you bend as a defense at your own 40-yard line, Luke. That's great. You didn't allow any points, but you allowed them to then punt, and your offense starts within their own 10-yard line. Or if you just don't get anything from your return units, you just take over where you take over. And I'm tired of the offense having to go 40 yards to get points. That's the only thing I want to say within this, is it's not just the offense. It's the defense. It's special teams. And I know that was long-winded. I cannot stress to you how I don't understand how some people, and I've had this discussion because I think it's an important discussion to have with so many Gopher fans, is you can lament the offense. That's fine. I'm not disagreeing with certain aspects of that, but we need to also look at the forest through the trees here to see what is the other crux of the issue. Is if you're not getting any explosive plays anywhere, I mean, do you know when the last strip sack fumble was for Minnesota?
I think we talked about this in the last pod. This was the Illinois game to end it.
Yeah, it was Ja Joyner turning the corner against Luke Altmyer and Champaign to end the game. And my goodness, did they need that, because Illinois was driving and they won the game because of it. I just want to see explosive plays on all three, not just from the offense, but all three. And I know I got us off track and I apologize, but I had to get that one off my chest, because if I spend so much time going down that rabbit hole to look at all these different stats, I feel like it's worth the discussion on the pod.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. It's fair. I mean, if you're looking at some of the advanced stats, Rutgers defense just isn't particularly good. They're not particularly good if you're looking at Parker Fleming's CFB graphs, and you're doing the matchup. They're really not good on early downs. Minnesota, conversely, on offense is not good on early downs in terms of EPA. Their defense ranks 123rd. Minnesota's offense ranks 100. This is an opportunity for Minnesota to get ahead of schedule, because they consistently end up in third and long, which, to your point, when you're having to go 40 yards is difficult. And just defensively, you know, the EPA per drop back, Rutgers is 132nd. They're better against the run. They're 120th in quality drive rate. Like, Minnesota should be able to find ways to put up points. Some might argue that you need to do it on the ground. I'd argue you probably want to do it through the air, and this is an opportunity for the pass catchers to hopefully show some improvement, Ryan. And they just need to do it.
Yeah, if I'm Greg Harbaugh, off the bye week, and especially if Darius Taylor isn't ready to go, I'm going to just lean on the redshirt freshman at quarterback, because Drake Lindsey's been really good. He's got an 89.2 PFF passing grade, and now he faces a defense that, as Luke talked about earlier, is one of the worst so far in college football. It's stopping essentially anything through the air so far. I mean, I just look at this game and say this, Luke. The skill guys need to play like Big Ten skill guys. It's not Femi Ijeboy, who I'm looking at, who's going to be likely getting his first career start and the most carries he's probably seen in a Gopher uniform. It's guys like Cam Davis, like the Washington grad transfer, your boy, the former Husky. I want to see him force some missed tackles. If they're going to continue to give him touches in between the tackles, I need to see multiple missed tackles forced in this game. Because if you can't make Rutgers defense miss tackles, how are you going to do that next week against Ohio State? Mm-hmm. And then specifically, this receiving core for Matt Simon, I need to see it. Because if you're going to lean on Lindsey, which I think you should, Javon Tracy, Lemeke Brockington, Jalen Smith, and then Logan Loya, and we got to see these guys start to make some plays, make some contested catches, and you're going to hear me lament on them later. Their stats in terms of elusiveness, missed tackles forced, or even winning 50-50 balls, it has not been 50-50, and that is a major issue. But it's a movable object. It's a Rob Smith defense. You should be able to put up 25 points with or without Darius Taylor. The question is, are we going to catch a break here before we get to Rutgers?
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll catch a quick break, yeah. Ryan, once again, the Burns Insurance Agency is here to provide the best service possible. And Ryan, they can shop for you and find you the best deal possible on your home, auto, boat, ATV. I don't know if you know, my dad just got a new basically Ranger, and you know, that that sort of thing definitely needs some insurance.
It certainly does. And for an agency that doesn't want to be the biggest, they just want to be the best in terms of service. And that's where I've actually been going through the claim service with the Burns Insurance Agency. And let me tell you, it's incredibly painless. We had a big hailstorm come through Roseville in late July. I knew that I had damage. I was up in my upstairs and I could listen to the quarter to bigger than that size hail come down on my roof. And I told my insurance agent, hey, I want to get somebody out here. Can you help me? And within 24 hours, somebody was on my roof. They're chalking things up. It's super easy. And I got a check in the mail today from the insurance company. All I did was just text my insurance agent, or for many of you, you can just give them a call. So if you think that you're paying too much for your home, your auto, whatever it may be, commercial business, support a Gopher fan who supports us here on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. Go to insurancebyburns.com, all one word, or you can just email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right. After the quick break, let's talk about the Rutgers offense. I think it's fair to say that they're currently playing well. I think in particular they've been good throwing the ball. At least that's what I've been able to see in the game against Iowa. Iowa's defensively still no slouch. On the season, they're averaging 41.8 points per game. Minnesota is giving up 12.3 points per game. In terms of total offense, they're averaging 445 yards per game. Minnesota's giving up 177. Just to put this in perspective, the Minnesota defense, that ranks first in the Big Ten for total yards. And for Rutgers, the 445 yards ranks seventh. The rush offense, Rutgers is averaging 141 yards per game. Minnesota is giving up 43 yards per game. And then passing yards, the Gophers are giving up 136 and Rutgers is averaging 308. That is third in the Big Ten. I mentioned the time of possession. I do think that's important. I think also worth noting is Athens' turnovers have been down. He has one thrown interception to seven touchdowns currently. He's been playing well. The first three games were against arguably an inferior opponents. And so I expect him to shine. He was very good in the first half. Historically, we've talked about his splits and how he usually can start fast, Ryan. And then as the game progresses, his splits usually indicate that he's going to regress. That was somewhat true, but definitely better than it's been in specific in that Iowa game. I think the reality is that the teams will slowly kind of start to figure it out, and I think that it'll regress to the mean with regards to his splits. I'm hopeful that Minnesota can do the same. You think back to last year's game, he escaped a couple of should be interceptions, but ultimately they were, you know, you got to get them, and they didn't get them. This is a talented receiving core, and that there's no doubt about that. And additionally, I know there were some offensive line injuries. I don't know if that'll continue to be the case, but this is going to be one of the better offenses the Gophers have gone up against all season.
It's the best offense they've faced all season, without question.
All right. Like,
that's not even, to me, a discussion topic. And it's going to pain some people to hear me say this, but Ethan Calick-Manis is playing outstanding right now. It's the fifth year in college. It's, I know some certain fathers don't agree with his fifth year in a certain system, but if we're just, I don't have time for that within my narrative street. Okay. I don't have time for that. Ethan so far this season is completing over 68% of his passes. He leads all Big Ten quarterbacks in PFF overall grade with 92.4. I mean, that's gaudy. His passing grade is 92.6. And he leads all Big Ten quarterbacks with 11 big-time throws. They're one of the arbitrary kind of things, but big shot play throws that have been really good. Like Kirk Shiraka and Ethan Calick-Manis are running that thing like it's 2019 right now. And that should scare you because they got a couple of gazelles on the outside in Ian Strong and KJ Duff, 6'4", number 8 and number 9, and those guys are fantastic. And all they do is make contested catches one after another. They've got 24 receptions each that are through the first four games. mean, they're averaging over 14 yards per reception, and they're a big play offense. No offense in college football at the Power Four level has taken more deep shots than Ethan Calley, McManus, and Kirk Soraka. And to be honest, if I had number eight and number nine making as many contested catches as they have, to give context, Ian Strong and KJ Duff, the 2 6-foot-4 gazelles, mm-hmm. they've got 14 contested catch wins between the two of them already. Mm-hmm. That's amazing, outstanding. Minnesota's receiving core of Lamecki Brockington, Javon Tracy, Jalen Smith, and Logan Loya have a combined 3. Do you think there might be a skill position issue in this game potentially? We're going to find out.
Yeah.
But they have got this RPO thing humming. And if you're going to be able to slow them down, you got to weather the storm early. And we saw that last year where Corey Heatherman, Minnesota's former defensive coordinator, I think saw some things that he didn't expect to see out of Kirk Soraka, and that's probably played a part in why he didn't pressure Ethan as much. And Ethan was outstanding in the first half, and then he was not outstanding in the second half. Minnesota dropped some passes that should have been interceptions, and seems to be a theme, unfortunately, for this team in the last whatever 7 games of FBS, if we're including the Rutgers one in it. With Ethan Calley-McManus, we all know it. There are going to be 2 or 3 plays in this game that you will get turnover opportunities, and you have to capitalize on them. I have the utmost respect for Kirk Soraka, mm-hmm. and I know that this is a game that fires him up in trying to. It's the irony of that statement, by the way, Luke, is Kirk is the one who decided to leave for more money. Like the first time he left to go to Penn State, that was his dream. He was a Pennsylvania guy. It wasn't just for more money, but he did get more money to go to Penn State to be the OC. When he left the second time around after the 2022 season, I ain't faulting my man for making $1.9 million out in Piscataway right now. It's a great gig if you can get it. On the flip side, I think Greg Harbaugh is making $700, $800, sure. somewhere around there. He's the lowest paid or the second lowest paid offensive coordinator in the Big Ten. It's a heck of a gig if you can get it. You just know that Soraka and Ethan are going to be ready to go. Well, we think, I know Soraka will be. The question is, where is Ethan going to be? This is the first time he'll have stepped back in Huntington Bank Stadium since he was getting booed against Wisconsin in 2023. Then he hit the portal, and then he went to Rutgers. I am fascinated. I know Soraka is going to have a game plan ready to go. They've got the skill position players in 8 mm-hmm. and 9. They got a good slot. I think their tailback, what is his name? Antoine Raymond, right?
Yep. Raymond.
He scored a rushing touchdown in 6 or 7 consecutive games. And you shouldn't sleep on the running version of their RPO.
Yeah, for sure.
But Ethan and Kirk and these two receivers on the outside, I mean, they got this thing humming right now. And we're going to find out. I mean, I watched the Greg Schiano press conference earlier this week, and he's touting Minnesota's number one ranked defense in the country, which I believe is via total yards thus far. We're going to find out a lot about this Gopher defense, and we're going to find a lot about these corners in terms of John Nestor, Zaquan Bryan, Mike Gerald. The only other thing I'll mention here before we get into the keys of the game, Luke, is PJ agreed with us in one aspect, and we talked about it during the bye week of the safeties were trying to do too much.
Yeah.
They were trying to go big play hunting. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem if all three of you, Coy Parrish, Kerry Brown, Aiden Goosby, are big play hunting, because then no one's doing their actual job. You're still doing your job. You're just not doing it to the best of your abilities. And so for Fleck to say that, either he listens to Luke Buehr in this podcast and he just heard that and took it from there, or Luke Buehr is an elite football mind and he shares some of the same opinions as the head coach. Which one do you think it is, Mr. Buehr?
Whatever makes me look better, honestly. That's what I'm going to go with.
Honestly, that's what I say to myself when I look in the mirror every day and say, why is my wife still with me? Because I know it's not my face for radio. But that's a whole different podcast.
Okay, last general comment. One thing that we know about Ethan is that he is incredibly good as a single read thrower, right?
First read throws is Ethan Calley-McManus in an RPO.
Yeah, that's why he's a great fit for that.
Yes.
The challenge is when the play breaks, typically has been when the play breaks down. And so you gotta get him to move and try and confuse him. If you can confuse him, we've seen where he can struggle and where he can overthink things. This is actually one of the beauties of the transfer portal, because if you have some familiarity with players, it's kind of fun to see your team go against them. Ultimately, we know some of Ethan's weaknesses. He's obviously improved. He showed that last year in their victory, and he's already showing it again this year. You see that with the maturation and just the experience that he's gained. I am curious to see how Danny Collins takes on this challenge. It'll be fun to watch. Can I any other thoughts before I get into the facts and figures?
No, go for it.
Okay, this will be, from what I can tell, this will be Minnesota's fifth game against Rutgers. Minnesota leads the series 3-1 all time. Rutgers won the last meeting. The first meeting was actually in 2016 that Minnesota won 34-32. Minnesota lost last year 26-19 in Piscataway. This surprised me. This is Greg Schiano's 17th year overall. Is this his 17th year at Rutgers in two different stints then, right?
I'll look while you're talking.
Okay. PJ's in his ninth year. He's 60-40. Greg Schiano, who...
Two different stints, yes.
Two different stints. Greg Schiano, in his two different stints, is 97 and 102 overall. He's 1-1 against Minnesota. PJ is 2-1 against Rutgers. The game will be at 11 o'clock, and it will be on BTN. The crew on TV is going to be Guy Haberman on play-by-play, Yogi Roth is the analyst, and Rhett Lewis is the reporter. The game will be able to listen or stream through KFN and their streaming things. Mike Grimm on the call, Daryl Thompson is the analyst, Justin Gard is the reporter. I think some of the interesting things, at least for me in this specific game, Ryan, is... One, this is big for both teams in terms of being able to get bowl eligible. Minnesota is going to have some very difficult games ahead of them. Winning this one is going to be key, and the same is true for Rutgers. You can look at their schedules. I won't go through the details of that. Again, this will be 11 a.m. kick. This is a maroon out, Ryan. Are you going to be wearing maroon in the press box?
I could wear one of my maroon shirts. I will also tell you, I'll be coming in hot for this game.
Oh yeah, you have the wedding or something, right?
I'd leave Thursday. I have a cousin getting married, and dear cousin, she's getting married on a Friday night in somewhere around Raleigh, North Carolina. So I'm going to the wedding on Friday night, and that's where I was really hoping that this Rutgers game time was going to be 2:30 or 6. Considering Minnesota has 5 night games in the first 7 now. 5 night games in the first 7. Are you kidding me? Like, what? And this is the 11 a.m. of all? Anyways, I got to take a 5 a.m. flight out of Raleigh that gets back into Minneapolis at 8 a.m. And then I got to hustle to the stadium by 9 to get on the radio for the pregame show. We're going to be coming in hot for that one. And I'm of all the 11 a.m. starts, Mr. Buer, that just has to be the one.
All right. And then I think one thing that we should note, I told you this ahead of time, there is this event that happens, I think it's towards the end of the first quarter or after the first quarter. They do this kicking for chicken thing, right?
Yep.
My brother-in-law is the guy that's going to be doing the kicking for chicken this year. So if you are a Gopher fan or you are just a chicken-loving fan, your free chicken is on the foot of my brother-in-law, who my boys call Tio Pepe. And
I hope at least one of our listeners turns to whoever the heck they go to this game with and hits him with, "Hey, this is the guy on the podcast, brother-in-law," and they look at you like you're speaking Swahili.
Yeah, and
I don't know how many of our listeners speak Swahili, to be quite honest with you, but I know if that's what that I hope you give no further context to your seatmate other than that.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for you, Mr. Luke Buer.
I think it's fantastic. Some news for those of you that are concerned, because a lot of people have missed this kick. I think it was made on the first one. It was missed on the second game. But my brother-in-law was a high school field goal kicker. I think we're going to be good. I think he's going to make it. So the lines will be long for Chick-fil-A on. I think it would have to be Monday that you'd be able to get your chicken. But what I just want to say, if there's any organizing students, if he makes that and you guys can somehow chant Tio Pepe, that'll make my nieces and my boys day. So that would be just hilarious. But yeah, he should make it. Just a little bit of extra pressure on him for that.
Look at you with a call to action on the podcast.
If he doesn't make it in the two attempts, he's never going to hear the end of it from me. So
you're such a good person.
He's okay. So we actually just when we learned about this, we ran up to Bethel and we filmed it. I was supposed to apply too and totally forgot. But he actually got his
Well, that's very convenient for you.
So maybe I'll have to do it next year. We'll have to do it again. Cause as you know, I was a high school kicker as well. But we've
all heard it on the podcast before.
He's definitely, I think he's good for it. We'll be getting some free chicken thanks to Tio Pepe. So
I love that.
All right. And then when it comes to the weather, looks like a beautiful day for football. Ryan would argue that it's probably going to be a little bit too warm. I think by kickoff, it'll be somewhere around like 69 degrees. By the end of the game, it'll probably be closer to 75. Wind doesn't look like it'll be a factor. It doesn't also look like the rain should play any part. Actually, there's almost zero chance of rain. Should just be a beautiful fall afternoon. Enjoy your maroon, and it should be a very, very fun game. Regardless, and then just real quick, last Ryan, the over-under for this game as it sits now on ESPN Bet is a 51.5 with Minnesota as a 4.5-point favorite.
It's a fascinating game, and we spent over an hour on it already, and that's where I'll keep my keys to the game short. And first one is for the offense. You got to find a way to score 25 or more points with or without Darius Taylor.
Yes.
I talked about the splits already. In the 27 games since Darius Taylor has essentially become the focal point of the running game, when Darius Taylor has played, Minnesota's 12-6, and they're putting up about 25 points per game. When he does not play, largely because of injury, Minnesota is 2-7, and they've only put up 17 points per game. It's just you're going against Rob Smith's defense, and they're not very good. They're allowing over 7 yards per play against FBS opponents. That's the worst in the Big Ten. They're 132nd in EPA per dropback. That's atrocious. Their starting linebacker, Moses Walker, he left the game with a non-contact injury, didn't return. And they're allowing 5.25 yards per carry. Opposing quarterbacks are completing 65% of their balls with QB ratings in the 150s. It doesn't come down to Drake and Harbaugh to me. It comes down to the running game of Femi Ejiboye and Cam Davis. But also, I want to see this pass-catching core do it. Like, Javon Tracy, Lemeke Brockington, Jalen Smith, and Logan Loya. I want to see you catch the ball clean and then make a play, make a man miss. We talked about the contested catch thing. I will give you one stat with that. Minnesota's combined contested catch win rate. So think about these four receivers in 50-50 ball situations, Tracy, Brockington, Smith, and Loya. They have a 50-50 ball win rate of 27% right now. Last year, the pass catchers were winning that for Minnesota at a 59% clip. Last year, 50-50 balls were 60-40. Now they're 27-73. The quarterback's throwing a good ball. You need to go catch it clean, make tough catches. The offense is putting up yards, but now they got to put up points. I mean, defensively, you took my key to the game, Luke. You're such an elite football mind.
Thank you.
I never give you the credit you deserve.
I know. I know.
So humble.
Yeah.
That's my West Roseville King.
Yeah.
Change the picture for Ethan Calliope-Manis and get pressure on him. And I know it's going to feel like deja vu when you see Ethan Calliope-Manis run out onto the field, except he's going to be wearing an R on his helmet instead of a gold or maroon M. And he's playing the best football of his career. He's got some really, really good receivers. They have a very efficient offense. They're putting up over 35 points per game against FBS opponents. They're playing really well coming into this. But if I'm defensive coordinator Danny Collins, I know that Shiraka is going to be ready to go. I don't know what to think of where Ethan's going to be. And I say that because we're all humans and this is emotional. And is he going to be sped up or is he just going to be calm, cool, and collected Ethan like we've seen through the first four games? I would make sure and there isn't public data on this like there is in the NFL for those guys and those media jackals to go through when looking at man versus zone coverage for quarterbacks and how they do against it. There's not that data as far as I'm aware at the collegiate level, but I would play as much zone coverage against Ethan Kaliakmanis as humanly possible. Number one, because I want to see nothing to do with one-on-one shots with 6'4 on 5'10 corners, but also to make Ethan have to go through his progressions. And if that first read isn't there, whether that's the slot slant, whether that's the backside post, whatever it may be, showing one look to Ethan pre-snap and then changing the picture post-snap gets him thinking, gets him off his first read potentially. And that's where Iowa started to win against him in the second half, was errant throws then were the result. And then he had his turnover off that as well. For the Gopher defensive line, if you don't get a rush, get your hands up in the bleeping passing lane and deflect passes. In an RPO offense, that ball's coming out quick. So if you can't get the rush and you see he's looking immediately towards your side of the field, it's going over there somewhere, and it's probably coming in hot. So get your hands up, deflect a pass, and try to get back to what you did for the majority of 2023 and 2024 when you were forcing, on average, multiple takeaways a game. But that's the thing, Luke. If you don't apply pressure on Ethan and you just let he and Shiraka sit back there and dial this thing up, he can pick you apart. And he's got the skill on the outside to do it. Getting him off his spot is critical. And then finally, I will be self-aware enough to say this, Luke. You can't spin your tires on narrative street week. You can't. I mean, Schiano gave Fleck his first Power 5 coaching job back in the day. And now I wouldn't say those two are on the best of terms anymore.
Why? Because
there's
like
a lot of familiarity between the two.
Yeah.
Kirk Shiraka was an offensive coordinator for PJ Fleck for 8 years between Western Michigan and Minnesota. And guess what? His protege, Greg Harbaugh, now runs the offense for Minnesota. In 2017, I gave this stat, I think I'm parent of spare. The Gopher coaching staff was Kirk Shiraka and Rob Smith as the offensive and defensive coordinators, and there were three quality control guys on that staff. One was Greg Harbaugh, one was Danny Collins, and the third was Luke's love at first sight, Joe Rossi. That's a lot of Power 5 coordinators in between it. So you know what each other likes to game plan. You've seen them game plan. It's just you have to just trust the film. And even with Ethan, I don't know what to expect because we're all human. And you can't take the emotion out of this game. You don't think Fleck wants to beat his former mentor after putting up the effort that they did in Piscataway last season? You don't think Ethan doesn't want to have the game of his life in a place that booed him in 2023 against Wisconsin? You don't think Harbaugh and Danny Collins want to show their former coordinators that they learned under what they learned? It's legitimately in our nature as humans to prove our worth against people we know especially. So how does each side handle the emotion? You can't let it affect you, Luke, but it's something that has to be talked about prior to our predictions.
Okay, let's look at the stats on the season, Ryan. I hate to inform you, but your straight up record is 2-1, 1-1 against the over under and 1-1 against the spread. I'm exactly the same, and this is after 3 games.
If we've learned anything, you should never take our bets, especially after last year's performances. You should take them and run. So I am fascinated to hear where you think this one's going.
All right. Just a couple notes real quickly. I did look at it's Kelly Ford. He gave his Minnesota a 53% chance of winning and classifies this one as a close game. Also, if you look at CFB graphs, this would be Parker Fleming's page. He predicts that Rutgers would win this game 57% of the time, and the projected score would be 25-21. And then again, going back to if you look at ESPN's FPI, they have Minnesota winning in this game about 55% of the time. ESPN Bet currently has this game at a -4.5 in favor of Minnesota. They had it opening at -3.5. You had told me elsewhere you had seen this at like Minnesota 5.5, right? We're going to go with 4.5 for the purpose of our predictions. But isn't that right? You had seen it open at 5.5 for Minnesota?
I can assure you that FanDuel opened this thing at 5.5.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah. Ultimately, I do like, maybe this is the optimist in me, Ryan. I think that Minnesota finds a way to score early and often. I think the offense maybe has a little bit of a breaking out coming off the bye. This was a game that we both picked as a win in the preseason, and the large language models all picked as a win as well. I will take Minnesota with my preseason prediction 27-21.
So a few more notes. Okay. Few more. I swear we're almost there, people. You've made it to the end of this. Give yourself a pat on the back. Go get yourself a coffee, a sweet treat, whatever you need.
You have been getting a lot of grief for your like highest and lowest, like best outcome and worst outcome, and then like you go somewhere in the middle.
Well, I've also learned that I do all this. So I write this preview article every week that goes live on Fridays.
Yeah.
And I found out today, essentially everybody just skips to the end and just reads the TLDR. So I'm like, I write like 2,000 words because I like to like deep dive each one of these opponents. Yeah. So I can do the podcast correctly, but also speak accurately and ask the correct questions, the coaches, yada, yada. I'm like, I'm putting all that work and ain't nobody reading it. Like, shucks. Golly gee. All right. A few other notes. Rutgers has blocked 3 kicks/punts in 4 games this season. Minnesota obviously hasn't. Minnesota has 0 defensive takeaways against FBS opponents. Rutgers has 1, so neither of them are really doing a good job of turning over opponents. Last year, Rutgers had a bye week to prepare for Minnesota. This year, Minnesota had the bye week to prepare while Rutgers took on Iowa. Glass half full. Let's be the optimists that we are on this podcast. The offense comes out like a hot knife through butter against Rob Smith. It gives him flashbacks to when Iowa came into TCF Bank and destroyed him. Drake Lindsey throws for 300-plus yards and 3 scores. Zaquan Bryan jumps an early slant to give the Gopher defense their first interception against an FBS opponent. And then Anthony Smith gets a strip sack late to end things. Gophers win 38-23. In the Johnny Raincloud scenario, Kirk Shiraka has Ethan Kaliakmanis and this Rutgers offense revved up, ready to go. And that Illinois native, the former Golden Gopher quarterback, just continues his blazing hot start. He throws for 300, multiple deep touchdowns. On the flip side, Minnesota's pass catchers continue to struggle to catch the football. They drop multiple passes in key red zone spots, and the Gophers settle for field goals. But the kicker would be, Rutgers blocks a Tom Weston punt in the second half for a touchdown. The Gophers lose 34-20. I do not want to make – I want to make sure I note this. I remember that Rutgers game versus Minnesota vividly because Rutgers' punt unit last year, their punt block unit, was close about 3 different times to getting Mark Crawford's punt, and Minnesota did not have a good day. Now – the reality is always somewhere in between, and the one thing I don't agree with Vegas on is this game total. As you can tell from my 2 previous ones, I don't like the matchup between Rutgers receivers and Minnesota's corners. I also think while Minnesota's offense has struggled to put up points, Rob Smith's defense is just not very good. I think the 2 quarterbacks duke it out into the fourth quarter, but then a pressure on Ethan Kaliakmanis as Rutgers is about to cross the 50, sees the slant sail high into the waiting arms of baby Jesus himself, the pride of Esko, Minnesota, Coy Parrish, all 8 pounds, 6 ounces with a halo above his head, gets his first interception of the season. The Gophers win 30-27. That would be a Rutgers cover for me, but a over as well.
All right, so we are going to separate here. Minnesota, I have covering the 4.5 and going under. You
are a brave man, and I understand that recency bias, and I'm counting on a dead cat bounce, essentially, where Minnesota can't hopefully play that poorly again, and they get a bye week to prepare. It's at home, all these different factors. you are a brave soul for taking them to cover.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm taking them to cover. So, okay. Again, want to thank you all for listening.
Hold on. I know this one's long, but there's a few games in the Big Ten I want to talk about.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I that totally just slipped my head. I'll pull it up too.
It is an awesome Big Ten slate.
I've seen some memes that were just hilarious. Like this is the worst week to go to a wedding because of some of the great games that are going to be on. I thought that was hilarious. I don't know if you've seen this, but maybe it's just.
I'm literally, figuratively, spiritually, and emotionally the one going to a wedding. And
Okay. At least in the Big Ten, the games that I'm most interested in, number 21 USC at number 23 Illinois. This is on Fox at noon, or I guess 11 a.m. here locally. USC is a 6.5-point favorite with the over-under being 60.5. A little surprised to see that USC is that heavily favored, knowing they're going to have to travel the two time zones. But this should be an interesting clash.
Well, that's going to be the whole thing for this week.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing, is we're going to find out about that 6-22, if that's going to come to fruition again, because USC last week played a 9 p.m. Central start against Michigan State. Now they have a 9 p.m. Pacific.
Yes.
Now it's 9 a.m. Pacific in Illinois. Like, these boys from Southern Cal got to go to the cornfields of Champaign. And I understand Illinois looked absolutely bleeping dreadful in their last game. But would it really surprise any of us if Lincoln Riley doesn't stand up in a big game where he traveled to the cornfields to take on Brett Bielema, who I'm sure that team is ready to prove that last week was a fluke? Fascinated to see what happens in this one.
All right. Ohio State's going to travel to Seattle to take on the Huskies. This will be their first matchup in Husky Stadium as conference rivals. I don't actually know if they actually played before that in Husky Stadium. Ohio State comes in as an 8.5-point favorite with the over under of 51.5. Honestly, man, I would take Ohio State to cover that personally, being the Husky fan. I just don't.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Luke, you haven't even said my favorite stat from this game. What does Washington's home game winning streak mean to you, and why is it nothing?
Isn't it like 12 or
22? Washington 22? Has won 22 won straight home games.
I just don't see it. I just don't think the defense is going to be good enough. So,
Columbus to Seattle is three time zones. Three time zones.
Yeah,
I'm just telling you. I cannot believe.
You trust Jed Fish? I've never been more.
That's a fair statement to say.
I've never been more disappointed in a hire. Yeah. So
if Jonah Coleman gets going early, baby.
I mean, that's fair, and that place can be electric, right?
I expect Ohio State to be pushed much more than I think you're giving them credit for, but we will find out.
All right. Number 11, Indiana travels to Iowa, a 2:30 kick, Ryan, and this is on Peacock. I don't know why this bothers me that this one's on Peacock, but I think this could be a very good game. Indiana is favored by 7.5 in Kinnick, the over under of 48.5. This feels like one of those Kinnick games that you don't expect Iowa to be all that competitive, and they grind out a close one.
Did you see the Cignetti quote?
No, but they blow everyone out. I know that's the truth. So,
well, he was talking about Iowa, and he was like, "We're going to have a much more difficult test this weekend."
Oh, interesting.
You just played the number 9 alleged team in the country, Mr. Cignetti. You're lighting people on fire. My man gives zero Fs.
Yeah.
I am fascinated to see this game, and it's a shame it's almost on Peacock, but
yeah. Okay.
Can Brunowski do anything? Can Mendoza look that good the way he looked?
Oh man, he looked amazing.
Bielema's defense against what is going to be Phil Parker, and we've seen how many times you might be able to beat Phil Parker for a half, but beating him for an entire game is so difficult.
Well, but the other thing is that teams that basically just like go DGAF, like Purdue, have found a lot of success in Kinnick too. That just kind of reminded me of some of those Jeff Brohm teams that were going, like, what? They pulled that off?
And I don't think this Iowa defense is what it was for some of the other years. I'm to be clear, I understand why the line is the line for Indiana being a 7-point favorite, but I can't wait to put this on as I'm transcribing Fleck quotes.
All right, UCLA is going to travel to the temporary stadium at Northwestern.
This is going to sound rude, and I don't mean it to sound rude.
Yeah.
And this is almost a little vulgar, too. This is the wet fart game.
It's on BTN at 2:30, the same time as the Indiana and Iowa game.
There's so many good games. I mean, you can say what you will about Rutgers and Minnesota. It's a great narrative, at least.
Yeah.
If you want to zoom out 30,000 feet, what are we going to glean from a UCLA team that fired their head coach and then a Northwestern team that also looks dreadful? And David Braun is probably on the hot seat as well.
Yeah, so this line is 6.5. Over under is 44.5. The favored team is Northwestern in this one. Probably shouldn't surprise anyone. And then finally, the game I think almost everyone's probably most looking forward to is number 6 Oregon traveling to number 3 Penn State. I believe this is the whiteout. They will be going to Beaver Stadium to take on the Nittany Lions, where they will be a 3-point underdog with the over on 3.5-point underdog with the over under being 51.5.
Another 2-3 time zone game in a very important game. I don't doubt that Dan Lanning and Oregon are going to be ready to go. My question is big game James Franklin actually going to show up in a whiteout?
Yeah.
They have, and we've seen Minnesota have to go and play in whiteouts. That is not an easy environment. But if this is going to be the year where Penn State finally takes the next step, you got to win your whiteout game against Oregon.
Don't you think, though, either of these teams could lose this game and still make the college football playoff?
Oh, the outcome of this game, if and the scope of the whole season doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, both teams can still make it.
Right.
It's just for the short-term narrative talks.
Yes, yes.
Of James Franklin winning.
Yeah.
Or Dan Lanning being able to go 3 time zones over in a whiteout and be able to compete. I mean, it's one to watch. I mean, you've also got Bama and Georgia on at the same time on ABC. So for every time there's a commercial in your game of choice, you can just flip to the other one. You've also got LSU and Ole Miss at 2:30. I mean, it's an awesome slate. I just enjoy it because these are the weekends you spend all year waiting for. And from 11 a.m. and you can even put on, if you're a sicko, you can put on BYU versus Colorado at 9:15 and go crazy.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. It's going to be a fun weekend regardless. I'm very curious to see what we learn about this Gopher team. I still think there's a good season in front of them. I know people were disappointed in the Cal loss, etc. I even said I think Cal's better than what we saw, and then we saw what they did against what they did against San Diego State. Ultimately, I think that can still be true. I still think that Cal can have a really good season, and this is some of just the realities of college football. So, you know, I'm going to take some notes for the next bye week when we do the girlfriend edition, and we're going to have to educate some people on just how quirky this game is. But that's part of what makes it so fun, Ryan. The quirkiness that it is, and it's going to be a fun weekend. I just hope for many of you that you're not stuck at a wedding or some sort of event that you can't get out of to enjoy some of these college football games. Again, thanks for listening. Thanks for the Burns Insurance Agency for helping make this possible. And go Gophers.